One dark night when we were all in bed. You know the kids' song, right? It's about the Great Chicago Fire, which was 150 years ago today. Now, the tune implicates Mrs. O'Leary and her lantern and cow. In reality, the fire destroyed some 17,000 buildings and killed some 300 residents. It's a defining event in Chicago's history and resilience. Let's talk about it now with journalist Robert Lorzel. He dug up firsthand accounts of that night from letters and memoirs and oral histories. And his piece is in the latest issue of Chicago Magazine. Robert, welcome.
Thank you for having me.
So let's quickly set the scene here, right? We have Chicago, 19th century America, growing quickly. It gets thrown up in a hurry with wood. And on October 8th, 1871, it's awfully dry. What else do we need to know before we kind of zoom into what happens?
Yeah, I mean, you should take into consideration just what a hot and dry summer that was. And on October 8th, there had been a fire the previous night, which burned down four square blocks of Chicago.
Oh, you write about that and how the firefighters, they're already exhausted, right, by the time we get to the O'Leary barn.
Yeah, right. So you have people who have been working 18 hours in some cases, literally within an hour or less after that. They get alarms that another fire has broken out on the city's west side. And famously, it broke out in the barn of the O'Leary family.
Yeah. Tell us about the truth about the O'Leary family and what we know. We know the tune. We know the kids' version of it. But who is the O'Leary family, and what do we know about the first flames on their property?
They were Irish immigrants. They had a cows in their in a barn behind their house, which they milked and sold milk in the neighborhood. And on this evening, a fire starts in their barn, and it still is a mystery 150 years later exactly what happened. Hmm. The myth that sprung up that everyone talked about was that Mrs. O'Leary, Catherine O'Leary, was allegedly in the barn milking her cow, and the cow kicked over a lantern, and that started the fire. We're pretty sure it did not happen that way, because just about everyone says the O'Learys were in bed. And they didn't milk cows at night like that.
Well, so one way or another, there is a fire. It spreads on their street. And then, as you write it, there appears to be this first kind of mistake here, right, in the fire department's delayed response?
Yeah, you know, and that they were developing a system of spotting fires, which, you know, was technologically advanced for the era, but sounds very primitive to us today, that there was a courthouse in the center of Chicago, and at the top of this building you had a watchman with a little spyglass who would look around the city, and if he saw flames somewhere, they would ring the bells and send out an alarm to the various fire stations telling them the number of the location where it was. And so the watchman saw the flames, and he looked in that direction, but he miscalculated how far away the fire was. Mm-hmm. and the bells rang out a fire alarm, but it was the wrong location.
Oh, I see. So they get there a little bit late, which I guess contributes to this fire getting out of control.
Yep.
You write about it kind of jumping the Chicago River and starting to turn north. There are these really vivid human accounts. And what stays with you about the human descriptions of the fear, the noise, the chaos at this point?
Well, obviously, as the fire starts to spread, people are fearful for their lives, but they're also thinking that they need to save their possessions. People didn't necessarily have insurance in those days, or if they did, they didn't trust it. So, for example, we have an account from a Russian immigrant who had recently arrived in the United States and was awakened in the middle of the night. And he runs out into the street and he says, people were carrying all kinds of crazy things. A woman was carrying a pot of soup, which was spilling all over her dress. People were carrying cats, dogs, and goats. In the great excitement, people saved worthless things and left behind good things.
Wow. And I mean, there's chaos. You write that there's looting of distilleries. Alcohol is part of the story. But there's also this crazy noise, right? I read one person wrote the wind was like a tornado. That was a big factor here.
Yeah. And that's one of the factors that you have to consider, is that the reason this fire spread so rapidly and became so hot had to do with the weather. And there was a very strong wind blowing through Chicago, the Windy City, as it's known, from the southwest, which was blowing the fire towards the north and towards the east. We even have the federal government's weather observer who says that at one point near the fire, the wind speed was about the equivalent of a hurricane and was lifting up buildings. And it was twirling like a tornado. So, you know, there is some belief that the heat of the fire itself was increasing the wind speed in that area. And you have people like a police captain who said the howling of the wind, the hollowing of the people, and the screaming was the most horrible thing that I ever heard in my life or anybody else will ever hear.
Oh, my goodness. The fire, right at this point, it's out of control. It is spreading north to burn up much of downtown Chicago. And then there's this other terrible moment when the waterworks gets taken out. I mean, those are supplying the hydrants, right?
Yeah, so people in Chicago or tourists who have been here will know the Water Tower, which is a building that survived the Great Chicago Fire. But really, the Water Tower and the building across the street from it, the Water Works, failed because even though they're made of limestone and the structure survived the fire, the roof burned in, and next thing you know, the water pumping stopped. So all around the city, people's faucets started running dry, and the firefighters were now left with no hydrants to draw from. The best they could do was to get water out of the river or lake, which meant they could fight fires, you know, along the water's edge, but pretty much nowhere else. So at that point, the fire pretty much just runs over the city with the wind blowing it, and the city cannot do anything to stop it.
Chicago is, of course, this great immigrant city, right? A lot of Irish, Germans there. There is class, there is inequality, but the scene that you write about at dawn the next morning at Lake Park on Michigan Avenue seems to reveal, I mean, disaster is always as this great leveler. Is that what it looks like?
There was a lot of talk about that, people talking about how the wealthier people of Chicago had to flee to places like the lakefront along with the poorer people, and for at least a moment, here they are together, both in dire circumstances next to each other. You see a lot of sympathy across the classes, but also, you know, some of the upper class people still talk about the lower class people with a very, you know, a taint of prejudice. Mm-hmm. We have a woman who is the wife of an Indiana Supreme Court justice who talks about their malicious, groveling faces and the paupers and all their hideousness. And, you know, and when she wrote that, I don't think she was necessarily intending to be mean about it. She was talking about how she was there with these people. But, you know, as we look back on that now, it really sort of makes you cringe.
Yeah. And just very quickly, you know, how did the fire eventually end? And looking forward, you know, how was this event, this kind of defining moment for Chicago to rebuild and I guess build Chicago 2.0 afterward?
Well, the fire began around 9 p.m. on Sunday, October 8th. The city burned the whole next day. And then it was in the early morning hours, maybe around 3 a.m. on October 10th, that some rain started to fall, the first rain in a couple of weeks, which dampened the fire. And also, I think the fire basically just ran out of things to burn. It reached the edges of the city where there were no more buildings right nearby. But then, you know, people going through the city the next day talk about how, and you can see the photos that were taken at this point, that big areas of the city were just pretty much leveled. I mean, it looks like an atomic bomb hit it, not just a standard fire. And the rebuilding of the city had to start pretty much right away. And there was also a huge effort trying to figure out what to do with the 100,000 people or so that were left homeless and were sitting out on the prairie or the beaches without any shelter. So a lot of work had to be done to protect them.
Yeah. And just a final footnote, we do have to note that Catherine O'Leary, Mrs. O'Leary, is in the end exonerated in the public record. Yeah.
You know, she was exonerated soon after the fire, but the myth took hold. And then in the 1990s, the Chicago City Council looked at the evidence again and had a proclamation declaring that the O'Leary family was innocent of causing the fire.
All right, that is Robert Lorzel, freelance journalist in Chicago on the 150th anniversary of the Great Chicago Fire. Great story, Robert. Thanks very much.
Thank you for having me.